Blog Talk Radio. Okay, folks, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you may be, whatever the case may be. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed, and I will be your host for the next couple hours. The call-in number is 619-639-4724, 619-639-4724. I'm going to start off with an article that I had forgotten that I bookmarked this week. What I usually do is I start the week and I end my shows on the weekend on Sunday, and then I immediately start a new set of folders for the following weekend. And as stuff comes up that's interesting, I bookmark it. And I had forgotten about this piece. So I had not really thought about doing it. And then I went back, was looking through everything I had, and thought, oh yeah, this is definitely worth doing. And so this one was from ThinkFuture.com. And you could have heard it any place else. That would have been fine too. But what it has to do with is that the web was 25 this year. On March 12, the web was 25 years old. And I think it's really easy to forget how much the web and the internet have impacted our lives. I've done this routine before, and I've talked about it before, but just computers in general, the whole technological explosion that has taken place over the years is mind-boggling and phenomenal to me. To think that the web is just 25 and where we've gone with it is amazing, and the technologies, I say, as well. Just thinking back thinking back to the 80s when I first got my first computer, the DOS-based systems, versus the very simple early Apples and Macintoshes, and what looked, just so awesome to be able to do then in terms of the graphical user interface compared to the DOS line editing, it was phenomenal. You look at it today, that's a problem people that just get into the computers have. There's so much in the programs that are up there. They look pretty, they're nice, you got a lot of icons, but you're overwhelmed. So, the author of this piece starts off, the web's 25 today, and it's not a lot has changed. He says, if you look at Mosaic today, what you will see is a very, very crude versions of what I'm using to write this blog. While the power of the browser itself has changed, and many layers of technology have appeared to replicate the software on my desktop experience in the browser, I'm still loading a web page. So on one hand, there's been a lot changed, to enhance our viewing. Clearly, with all the multimedia stuff we have, he goes on to say, of course, in the early days, the power of hypertext was an ability to let you jump to links where you needed. People used to surf. But then he makes a statement that intrigued me, and I think it's really important to realize and recognize. Maybe not important to realize and recognize. I think it's a profound statement. Whether people think it's important to realize and recognize is up to them. He says, though we still call it surfing, we no longer surf in the traditional sense. Well, most people I know don't. They take a less active role, preferring instead to allow curated content to come at them in feeds, whether they be properly curated or not. That's interesting to me. The information sent our way. People used to search and seek out information more, or being spoon-fed more and more and more. Now, there's nothing inherently bad about that, nothing inherently wrong with that. But I think it's fascinating in that if we don't notice that, we don't pay attention to that. It's fascinating to me. I have a Facebook account. I like to get a lot of stuff from Facebook. A lot of the people I know on Facebook are fairly intelligent people, and they put a lot of interesting stuff up. But nevertheless, what happens if you're on something like Facebook, or if you're on, even if you're on just email feeds, and I don't do most of the mobile devices. Back in 1995, I kind of made a conscious decision that it was time to kind of back off and slow down. I always liked being on the leading edge. I was in technology. I was building, upgrading, and repairing computers. And, you know, as the laptops came out, I thought, really, I spent so much time with these things already. Do I want to be fundamentally chained to it all the time, every place I go? You know, there's only so much you can create that changes in a matter of nanoseconds, milliseconds, picoseconds, even hours and stuff. You know, we have this constant 24/7 news feed, and the catch lines and catchphrases get shorter and shorter, and they're always working to keep our attention. So I kind of backed off. I didn't get a laptop immediately. I thought, well, you know, that's all fine and well. Certain processes in life probably are just as well left to their own devices and let them take time. But it's interesting to me because what now we have is we're being fed stuff. And if you're on something like Facebook, and depending on who your friends are, and I have friends in different groups in different parts of the world, they're not all my Facebook friends, it's amazing what gets filtered out that's the same. I always was a pretty good joke teller. So if I heard a good joke, I would store it away and pass it off into the culture. Well, it turns out it gets harder and harder to tell jokes. You know, someone's heard that. Oh, I heard that one already. You know, someone dies, it's up immediately, a public figure. Just heaven forbid you watch something on television and lo and behold, it's something, whether it be something like American Idol or something, and you go to look up something, it might have to do with, you might not remember the names of the contestants that you're looking at or something, look it up, and kabam, you got the results from that night show, you know, unannounced, the spoiler. You know, everyone's on top of it right there. And so anyway, I was reading this piece, and it struck me, yeah, we still call it surfing. We no longer surf in the traditional sense. We take a less of an active role, preferring instead to allow curated content to come at us in our feeds, whether they be properly curated or not. There's something profound about that. Last week, I think it was, maybe the week before, I did a piece from a book that I had just been given. A friend of mine loaned it to me. It says, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains, The Shallows, Nicholas Carr. And it goes, over the last few years, I've had an uncomfortable sense that someone or something has been tinkering with my brain, remapping the neural circuitry, reprogramming the memory. My mind isn't going so far as I can tell, but it is changing. I'm not thinking the way I used to. I feel it most strongly when I'm reading. I used to find it easy to immerse myself in a book or a lengthy article. My mind would get caught up in the twists of the narrative or the terms of the argument, and nights spent hours strolling through the long stretches of prose. That's rarely the case anymore. Now my concentration starts to drift after a page or two. I get fidgety, lose the thread, begin looking for something else to do. I feel like I'm always dragging my wayward brain back to the text. The deep reading that used to come naturally has become a struggle. Maybe I'm an aberration or an outlier. Excuse me while I get a drink of water here. But it doesn't seem that way. When I mention my trouble with reading to friends, many say that they are suffering from similar afflictions. The name of the book is What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains, The Shallows. And as you go to read it, there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of brain research, a lot of understanding of the brain, how, depending on what you do, maps to different areas of the brain. And I'm concerned. You know, I'm concerned that we're being spoon-fed. It's not even the fact that we're being spoon-fed that's problematic. It's the fact that, for the most part, in many cases, we're not aware, or we don't take the time to pay attention to that. It even happens with our machines. You know, I started off in computers because I wanted to know how they worked. I wanted to make them do what I wanted them to do. And the whole trend has been to make it automatic. You know, so I go out and work on people's machines these days, which is rare. not rare, but not that often. And people talk about how slow their machines are. And I'll open the task manager. For those of you who use Windows, you probably know about the task manager. And it'll be 130 tasks open, 140 tasks open. And I'll notice that the CP usage is running at 90, 95%. Because all this stuff is going on in the background that people aren't aware of. Well, I didn't load that. I know you didn't load that. Some helpful programmer, that whether it be for Adobe or Windows updates or any number of the online backup programs, they're doing stuff for you, and it's kind of troubling to me. I guess it shouldn't be. I guess it shouldn't be. I should just kick back and say, wow, let them do it. He goes on to say, secondly, a lot of the stuff that we have to do, things that seem really complicated and formidable to accomplish, will simply disappear. So many things will become effortless and seamless. We won't need to do many things anymore. Agents will do things for you on your behalf based on things that you've already done, things that it thinks you will be doing. One of the biggest annoyances I have with computers, there again, are the auto update stuff. I want to be notified when I need to update something, but I just don't like it when the computer decides that it's going to do something to help me. For one thing, it frequently interferes with something else I'm doing. You know, all of a sudden the computer decides it's going to reboot because it downloaded and installed an update that needed to reboot the machine for it to work effectively. Everyone will be a rock star. I thought that one was interesting. In chat prior to the start of the show, COG asked me if I had heard of, you can see it in the chat room, Rock Candy Funk Party. I hadn't. I went there and listened to it. But as I read this piece about the web, is 25 today. That was actually last Tuesday. And it says, anyone can enjoy a rock star experience. Amazing virtual entourage. Well, when everyone can do it, does that kind of take away the special nature of people that are, in fact, true musicians? I've tried to learn to play the guitar many times in my life, and I can get a certain level of proficiency. I can play chords. I just don't have quite the rhythm and feel for it, nor the inclination to spend all the time that a musician does. Something's happening technologically to us that we're allowing our technology to do to us. I don't know that it's such a bad thing, but I also think it's something we should be aware of. And so happy 25th birthday to the web, which becomes ever more present in our lives on a daily basis. And it's become a tremendous tool, a tremendous resource. But like I say, I wonder in the big picture, who is using who? Is the technology using us, or are we using it? I have a friend that does a show on Sundays on the local AM station. He calls it the Thinking Machine. And he was right at Apple Computer from the very beginning, you know, in the building and programming and all that stuff. And he always says that everyone should learn to program. Dabble with it in your fingers. At least get a sense of what's involved in it. So you have really a sense of where all this nice, glitzy stuff comes from. There's no magic there. I mean, a lot of programmers, it's artsy to be a good programmer and stuff. But ultimately, people talk about their machines as if they're human. And one day they will look very human. They're working on that, too. There are days that we might not know that they are any different. And I think there's a movie that just came out where someone falls in love with their computer. The computer learns how to play us. You know, this future of movies like iRobot and so many others, Millennial Man, is it Millennial Man, something like that, that's not all that far in the future. And I think it behooves us to be aware of the fact that, you know, are we humans or are we here to serve at the request of our machines? So I found this a fascinating article. It really fascinated me. One of the things that I like to joke about is that my dad used to say, Why are you doing computers? Computers are like a fad. You should get into a business which is necessary, like a doctor, lawyer, real estate agent. Everybody gets sick. Everyone needs a house. Even barbers are necessary. But computers, needless to say, computers are necessary today. So that was kind of that was a fascinating piece as far as I was concerned. And it ties right into the next piece that I want to bring up that I think is also fascinating. They are related. And the name of the piece is 10 Reasons Why Handheld Devices Should Be Banned from Children Under 12. Well, you know, good luck with that. This one is about handheld devices, but it also had tied to it another piece that was a reference link. Let me pull that one up too, because it actually talks about the effect of fast-paced cartoons. It's from Pediatrics. And it's fascinating in the way it starts off. Here we live in this technological society, and it starts off, the effects of fast-paced cartoons. Since its invention some 60 years ago, television has been maligned by many as being bad for children's brains. In the 70s, when teachers reported that children began school with five-minute attention spans, initial scientific inquiry failed to substantiate their concerns. In fact, early and consistent evidence has demonstrated educational benefits of high-quality preschool programming. However, the media landscape has evolved considerably since then. The typical child began watching television at 4 years of age in 1970 and consumed 3 to 4 hours per day, and that was considered just a lot. The typical child today begins watching at 4 months of age and is engaged with media for up to 8 hours a day. Now, what's funny about this is I read it and I read the other one that says 10 reasons why handheld devices should be banned for children under the age of 12. I think it's nice information to know, but I think maybe the horse is out of the barn. I think that the barn door's been left wide open, and it may be too late. And I heard from someone today that of a two-year-old was actually, their parents had gotten them a handheld device. Now, you can understand why parents want their kids to have this technological age, this advantage in this technological age, because, you know, leave kids, you know, they don't have it, they're in trouble. The American Academy of Pediatrics and the Canadian Society of Pediatrics state infants ages 0 to 2 years old should not have any exposure to technology. 3 to 5 years be restricted to 1 hour per day, and 6 to 18 years restricted to 2 hours a day. Now, you tell me how many kids there are running around out there with cell phones that their parents have sent them to school with that aren't already over the 2 hours a day. You think you're going to be able to take them away? Probably not, but interesting. Children and youth use 4 to 5 times the recommended amount of technology with serious and often life-threatening consequences. Kaiser Foundation 2010, Active Healthy Kids Canada 2012. As a pediatric occupational therapist, I'm calling on parents, teachers, and government to ban the use of all handheld devices for children under the age of 12. And I made a comment there, fat chance. You know, fat chance that's going to happen. You know, I'm going to do my thing. You can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me what to do with my kids. You know, I want them to have the edge every other kid does. But is it hogwash or not? You know, the first thing it says is one of the problems, rapid brain growth. One of the reasons. Early brain development is determined by environmental stimuli or lack thereof. Stimulation to a developing brain caused by overexposure to technology, cell phones, internet, iPads, TV, has been shown to be associated with executive functioning and attention deficit, cognitive delays, impaired learning, increased impulsivity, and decreased ability to self-regulate, tantrums. Oh, fuck it. Just, you know, the television shuts them up. Plop them down in front of the television. Cheaper than a babysitter. Now, I'm going to say something. I want to backtrack and make some qualifying statements here. Is the world's been probably going to hell in a handbasket since humankind first perceived its cognitive functions. This is probably not new. People have been complaining like forever about the way to do it. But one of the things that I think is new and it's important to understand and recognize is the rate of technological advancement and development is going at light speed. Like I say, just think of the computers back in 1990, for those of you that were around back then. I got enough people in this audience that are that old. Late 80s, and look at where we are today. Yeah, I had someone come in today, and I was having a conversation with them, and we were talking about technology. And believe it or not, there are a lot of people that still use faxes. Attorneys use faxes, and doctors for sure use faxes. I don't know what other businesses, but those two are huge ones. And this person is going to be down for a while, 6 weeks or something like that. And they're going to have to be working from home, and they need to be able to get faxed stuff. Well, their fax machine is broken. A lot of people don't have them anymore. I still have an old-fashioned fax here. I use it from time to time. I turn it on from time to time if I want things faxed to me. They could be medical reports or something like that. But here the technology's changed. You know, people aren't even using faxes anymore. So I'm trying to figure out, tell them the best way to do it. And I say, well, you know, you got the phone line. Well, I would bet there's a USB fax just plugged in the side of your laptop. If it was me, I would consider getting something like that. You know, that way you have the fax go in the laptop. It's there. You can read it, look at it. You decide whether you want to print it or not, because they were thinking about buying a new one and all that. And then I started to think of some of the problems, being on the road, could they get the faxes on the road, wireless settings, security, you know, virtual private network, you know, all that. And it just struck me, you know, I have a desktop that I do most of my work from. I've got a laptop that I can go mobile with. It's an old one. It's a Windows 7 machine that I've had for a couple of years now. It's be heavy considered by, you know, certainly by today's standards, it's old, but it works. You know, I take it with me when I go up to Stanford, because my wife has dealt with cancer over the years, and I can both play in terms of getting on Facebook or stuff like that, and I can get work done. But for the most part, you know, a lot of people are just getting away from the laptops, from the desktops. I know they're still out there, and a lot of people still have them. I think they're going to be around for a long time, because when you sit down to do work, like if you do programming or web pages or WordPress blogs and stuff, it's nice to have a laptop, a desktop. But things are changing. They're changing rapidly in terms of the technology. But by the same token, second problem with kids is delayed development. Technology use restricts movement, which can result in delayed development. You know, the fat kid in front of, which is the third one on the list. You know, what do you think about that? You know, I know most of you will not call in. Some of you do call in. I'll probably pick up a call in a second. But what do you think about this? See, one of the things when I was reading the thing about the birthday, and I read you the thing about how technology is changing, the internet is changing the way we do things, and I read you this the piece from what the internet is doing to our brains. I think we often realize that. I don't think we often stop to realize what an impact it makes on us. I had one of my, there again, Facebook friends, you know, he's into all the awesome stuff. You know, everything's epic for him, epic and awesome. It's epic. He rarely uses awesome, but, you know, he's really into jargon is, you know, biohacks and it's hack this and a hack that and whatever. And he posted a piece today that was interesting along these lines of education and learning. Let's see if I can find that one because I don't think that I bookmarked it, but I can probably find it fairly quickly on his page. But it fascinated me because it's along this line is what is, you know, what's the internet doing to our brains? How are we relating? Here it is. Train your brain to get smarter and faster. Smarter, faster. I keep saying, you know, as long as our technology, we realize that our technology is an extension of ourselves, a tool, not the answer, I think we're fine. But I think it's easy to get lost in the technology. Says though we can't all hope to match Sherlock Holmes, preternatural deductions, I've never heard that word, abilities and knack for witty repartee, with a little practice, you can build a mind place just as lavish as the famed detectives. And he goes and he gives all these techniques for memorizing things, mnemonics for dealing with things, you know, chunk it. Your brain is consistently being inundated with sensory information. While it could theoretically store the entirety of your cumulative life experience, your brain instead is more selective with what it trucks into long-term memory. So, you know, you learn it in chunks. Acrostic. Need to remember long shopping lists, you know. Let's say you need figs, lettuce, oranges, apples, and tomatoes. Make a word out of it. Float. And I was reading through this, use the keypad. I didn't read that, you know, break it down, you know. All memory techniques, all, you know, make it memorable. You know, visualization, add pictures to the words that you want to learn and memorize, you know, tie it to something normal to help you. I went all the way through this thing, and something struck me. Something jumped out at me, and I actually left a comment to him. I said, good piece. I think it fails to address something important that screams out to be addressed in the partial paragraph below the title, which was that we can't all hope to match Sherlock Holmes, you know, preternatural deductions, abilities, and knack for witty repartee. With a little practice, you can build a mind palace just as lavish as the famed detectives. Now, since this isn't 21 questions, I'm not going to drive you through that. Everything was directed toward, everything on the list for the most part had to do with memorization and fast. Very little of it, I didn't see anything on there that had to do with deductive logic and reasoning. Now, you've heard me talk many times over the last, you know, months about slow thinking, fast thinking. The fast thinking process being not really thinking at all, in my opinion, is more of a reactionary thought process that's immediately spews forth an answer to the given situation and requires no analytical thinking. And a lot of our technology is leading us down that path today. Since it's the 25th birthday of the internet, and the question is, do we even notice it? See, I'm starting to find myself go back personally, you know, because I grew up in that. I think everyone's growing up in that age. If you've ever taken any of the sciences or mathematics, you know, where the issue comes up, why memorize what you could look up? And it makes a lot of sense, especially within that slow thinking mode, of course. Why would you? If people accept that as a clever thing, and, you know, yeah, why should I have to memorize all that stuff? They say the teacher and the kids, and, you know, why should I have to memorize it because someone else may have done it and stuff. But I just started to realize something, too, is that when you don't exercise that, your brain is just like your muscles. You don't exercise it. Don't use it. You lose it. Use it or lose it. And that was like that piece that I read in The Web is 25 Years Old Today. Our machines are doing more and more and more for us. We're doing less and less and less, and we're not getting the exercise mentally, physically, or any of that. And slowly, 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 it impacts us. And the question is, what's it doing to our kids in the next generation? You know, I shouldn't really care. Actually, to tell you the truth, I do and I don't. It's out of my hands, you know. When they get to be, when they get in their teenage years, it's out of your hands. That's why I would spend a lot of time with kids that are younger. I would pull them away from the computers and things. They certainly need to be taught about them and learn them. We are in a technological society, but I think there's a lot to be said in this article here where it says 10 reasons why handheld devices should be banned for children under the age of 12. Epidemic obesity, you know, kids that are playing and games aren't getting out there running and playing. This is one of the ones that came up. It's a sleep deprivation. 60% of the parents do not supervise their child's technology usage, and 75% of the children are allowed technology in their bedrooms. 75% of children age 9 and 10 years are sleep deprived to the extent that their grades are detrimentally impacted. As a study from Boston College, I haven't looked it up. I want to say something about that, too. Normally, I like to look up any reference that I get from someone, any reference that I use, because there again, we live so much in a day and age of references, things people footnoting and referencing materials and referencing studies. And I did a piece with, I've done a piece in the last year that said fact, it was facts are dead. It's gotten to the point is, people know out there we're so lazy that people put in false references to give a credibility and gravitas to a thing that they want us to believe, because they know we won't take the time to check out what the reference says. And frequently when you check out references that people use to support their argument or point of view, you find out those don't say it at all. Aggression. Violent media content can cause child aggression. Young children are increasingly exposed to rising incidents of physical and sexual violence in today's media. Now, you know, what's interesting about this is clearly if kids are not exposed to the technology and the media and the television, they're not going to be exposed to the violence. But where are the parents in this whole thing? Are we living in a society where parents have given up their responsibilities? Digital dementia. I had not ever thought about this. High-speed media content can contribute to attention deficit as well as decreased concentration and memory due to brain pruning, neuronal tracts to the frontal cortex. I have to look that one. Children who can't pay attention can't learn. You know, you've heard me say it many times. You know about knocking a texting mentality. Not that there's anything wrong with texting. I think it's fine, but when you get into reductionist mode in the world, for every reduction or compression cycle, you lose some information. You compress enough, you get to the point that you lose important information. You know, the whole notion of compression is either throwing away what you don't need. That's what they do in MP3s. They throw out sounds that you don't tend to be so sensitive to, retain the ones you do. When you go ahead and compress text, you know, you can use algorithms that take certain character strings and replace them with a character. It could be like AND being replaced with a dollar sign. And so that's a 3-to-1 compression ratio, and it dynamically does that in the background. But what information is lost when things are compressed? Radiation emission, well, I'm an old man, so unsustainable. So it's got a chart at the bottom of this piece here. It says developmental age, 0 to 2 years, how much? Technological use guidelines for children and youth, 0 to 2 years, none. Nonviolent TV, none. Handheld devices, never. Nonviolent video games, never. Violent video games, never. Online violent video games and or pornography, never. Throw the TV out when your baby's born. You shouldn't get it till they're at least 3 years old, and then they say limit it to 1 hour a day, and nonviolent TV only. 6 to 12, that's 3 to 5. 2 hours a day, nonviolent TV only, and then 13 to 18, no more than 2 hours a day of nonviolent TV, handheld devices, and then they say nonviolent video games or violent video games, limit to 30 minutes daily. Fat chance of doing that. Fat chance of doing that. I think the cat's out of the bag. I think we've gone way beyond that. I don't think we'll ever be able to stop that, but it'd be interesting to see where society, progresses from here. And note that the experts say that there are reasons why you should limit your children's use of electronic devices. In this case, it says why handheld devices should be banned for children under the age of 12. They go all the way up to 18. I had someone ask me today, I'll throw this one out real quick before I move on to another thing, because it ties into what I'm talking about. I put up a Facebook post. It's a lot of my material comes from there, because that's where I have interaction. I'm interested in what people have to say. I put up stuff like this and see where it goes, see what people have to say. And as this young man said, he says, I'm not a huge fan of TV, but if you only watch House of Cards to see how things get done in the old boys club of extremely skilled manipulators trading false hope and promise for real world profit and power, you begin to understand why things like this are happening all the time right in front of our faces here in the real world. Now, what was interesting about this is a young man. He's on the waxing side of life. I said that to someone today, and they got a kick out of it. I'm on the waning side of life. It's like the full moon. My questions are, now that we understand why things like this are happening all the time right in front of our faces here in the real world, why do we allow and accept it? See, what I was really interested in is here's a dynamic young man. He's intelligent. He's bright. He's got a lot of skills. He's engaged in a lot of stuff. And he knows. He just told me something that everyone knows. I keep running this out here on this show and other shows. Everyone knows it, but no one seems to be able to do anything about it. Keep going the way you're going. You might wind up where you're going. Keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is the definition of sanity. So I asked him, why do we allow and accept it? And I asked, what is his generation going to do to correct it? And another question I'm interested in for the youth, the younger ones that are listening to me, is do they think they can make any real difference? Is this a fait accompli? Is just the way the humanity is? Is this just the way humanity is, and we're it's going to be that way? It's been that way since the beginning of time. It's going to be that way to the end of time. So, someone told me that I should be doing something too. I am. I do whatever I do. I do it with my interactions with people. I encourage people to participate in their communities, get out there and do things. To the extent it does anything, I share my ideas. But someone made an interesting comment to me because it involved me. What they said, Vernon, as you probably know, I have the same positions as you do on many things. Yet, I'm waiting for orthodox libertarians like you to do the obvious. Now, it was interesting because I don't see myself. There are people that see me as a rabid conservative. I have been in circles where people have told me I'm a great liberal. I haven't had too many people tell me I was an orthodox libertarian. So I think that's interesting. I said, I'm eager to hear you describe the second half of the 20th century and the present fragment of the 21st, absent the Pax America, the well-armed Pax America. You might take, for a start, what we know of the first half of the 20th century, completely free from American military expansion. Now, most of you that know me know that I have very little, my history is nothing. I didn't study history. I escaped history. I got out of studying it. And in school, I thought I was very clever. I wish I knew more. So from a historical standpoint, I can't say much. But I can tell you how I've come to see the last half of the previous century and the first one here. And it's very much within the context of Alvin Toffler, who wrote a book called Future Shock. And that is, in a technological world, technology changes society, leading to an acceleration in the rate of change of the technology, which further accelerates the rate at which technology changes. And it's an accelerating acceleration that grinds people up. See, I'm of the 60s generation, and what's fascinating about that generation to me is that's a generation whose parents fought World War II. And that's the one that Tom Brokaw called the greatest generation. And I don't know that I'm going to call it the greatest generation. The United States and the Allies prevailed in World War II. I clearly think that's a good thing, but that's what I've been taught all my whole life and trained my whole life. I cannot imagine what the world would look. I don't know what the world would look like. I shouldn't say I can't imagine. I don't know what the world would look like under Hitler and the Japanese and the Italians. You know, I'm certainly taught to believe it would look terrible and much worse and all that. But they came home, and you know, my father was part of that generation. He made the comment, he's made it many times, in fact, that the greatest thing his generation did was not in winning the war, you know, but in the nation they came back and built up. Well, something interesting happened in that generation, because for the first time, this is my interpretation anyway. We see for one of the first times, because he came out of the Depression, in American history, a whole generation whose parents provided a life where their kids had free time to do as they wished, that just up to that point in time was unheard of. You know, you're part of the family structure. You went to school and you went home and worked, whether it be on the farm or whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, people who were born during World War II, like myself, the baby boomers, this is totally new. And when you have freedom for the first time, see, there was a point in time that people would never think about challenging their parents or questioning their parents. And all of a sudden you have the rock and roll era of the 50s, and you have young adults finding out or discovering that it's possible to say no and get away with it. You know, children say no to their parents all the time, but, you know, as you grow up, you know, so you have a whole generation more or less rejecting their parental values. The values, the hard work, the family structure, and everything that provided the freedom for young people to get out there and express and do their own thing. Now it gets rejected by the kids during the 60s. You know, you get the flower children, all that. Of course, the country was torn apart by the war. Anyway, I will respond to him. He wants to know what my interpretation of the last half of the century is, what it means, why it went the way it did. I think we can just attribute a lot to an accelerating technology, a lot to challenging of the systems and rules that have been in place so long, because for the first time in the evolution of history, kids had the opportunity and chance to do that, and they did. All of a sudden, when you find out that, you know, the rules don't come from God above, that you got a certain power to say no, kind of goes to your head. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And something gets lost in that. See, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that people need to be able to say no to their government, to their governmental structures. All the same, that being said, there's the other part of what does it take to hold a society together and to work together. See, when you live in the same neighborhood, there's certain, it's just kind of the nature of things, the way things work. You give up certain freedoms. It's like that old statement, you know, my freedom ends where my freedom ends where your nose begins when it comes to my fist. You know, freedom can't be unbridled. There has to be a certain, and I say that probably comes with wisdom and time because you know, you have this whole notion of unquestioning belief in authority. And I think you always need to question authority, but what most people mean when they say that is, in fact, reject authority. And I think there's got to be a certain delicate balance in there. Michael Hood said he was born in World War I. I hardly think so. Is this Mike Alfax?
Yes, how you doing, Vern?
Good. Why do you always put restricted up?
How did you know it was me?
I was curious.
Wow, no, that shows something, Vern. I guess you have that metaphysical psychic powers or something.
No, I just shows up on my board that way.
Oh.
You know, the NSA's got you tagged as well as it does me, whether we anyway, go ahead.
I come up as 111 and he just knew it was me. I don't know.
No,
but
anyway,
Ron, it's a great conversation.
Mike, stop a second. You didn't come up as 111, you came up as restricted.
Oh, restricted. Wow.
Yeah.
It has the whole word there. Wow.
You have children on the call boards that would tag you with that. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Well, the BTR, I guess they must have changed their switchboard. But anyway, Vern, it's a great show you're having. I don't know, you talk about so many topics. I can take my time. But, you know, when it comes to freedom, I mean, you have to have some type of order. Even when you write a computer program, you're putting things in order. And if that program you want you use to have some type of freedom to move here and there, it has to be some order to set that up. Now, they say freedom is no limitations, but like you say, once we live with each other, we must compromise with those lines and have a little balance so we can have some freedom. Well, you said World War II, the baby boomers, it goes with technology also, about people is different. Well, I know World War I, the technology did advance as far as on the battlefield, but during World War II, technology, radio, plus we had the Korean War that was into that, and, you know, just spreading the conscience of the people through the technology, through the media and the papers. And I think that made people more educated and more aware of their rights and what was going on in society. So they were more revolutionary. That's just my opinion. Yes, we all are insane. Everybody has some type of insanity with them, every human being, but some is worse than others and it can affect others. You know, you was talking about cartoons, how cartoons is by, you know, the first cartoons, the nickel movies, Tom and Jerry, they were only for adults. If you look at the old Tom and Jerry movies, they have the guns, shooting, and violence and things of that nature. But when you were talking about the handheld with the 12-year-olds, it's amazing. Some adults actually need to get off of the Internet. It's pros and cons to this. We have some adults that's 50-some years old playing like kids, doing something that you probably wouldn't, you know, want a teenager to do on the Internet, and just doing a little mischief. So, you know, there's pros and cons to all of this type of stuff, you know, especially when you have adults. But I want to give you a little, you know, Internet story. you know, a little later, or I can give it to you now, about, and it goes to your topic on how pros and cons and how dangerous it is and how this internet can actually bring out someone's personality, bring out their psychological mind, and their personal characteristics, what their morals are. I mean, you can actually see it. And it's kind of, you know, it's amazing to me, Brian. Everything has its pros and cons. And one thing you were talking about is how the pros is, listen, you can become, and you mentioned this, you can come on the internet and you can become, you know, your own business person. You can do a self-promotion, but there's consequences to that. If you self-promote yourself and put your information out there, people will take advantage of that and try to ruin your reputation. See, it's easy to, you know, put yourself out there, but people can cut and paste your picture that you put up on Facebook if you give them your real name, and they can go and attack your family and put your pictures up. And I mean, it's doing right now. It has wars. It's psychological YouTube wars and psychological BTR wars and psychological all websites. You know, we gave new definitions of trolls, and people are trying to psychologically mess with people's minds over the internet. It's like they're far away, but they're actually trying to inflict pain on you, you know, like they're around you every day. So, I mean, it's pros and cons. You have to protect yourself, but luckily I protected myself. You know, you have some sophisticated people from all walks of life that can come on the internet, and situation where two, you know, highly educated people tried to tag team and try to expose me, my information. But they don't have my information. And see, the checkmate is on me because, one, I am in the technology, and two, I know how dirty people are. So luckily, I did protect myself. So if I was just blind and didn't have to think back and say, hold up, I don't know these folks for a certain extent. I'm doing this. I'm trial and error. If I didn't, they would have exposed me. And, I mean, it's like and we as hosts and or BTR and anybody that sets up their, you know, website, you're just expressing your opinions. But people will cross that line and try to, you know, do certain things to you. So, you know, I mean, we can see it. Are people trying to do things to you? Well, yes. It was a situation where the two gentlemen, and as you know, you know them very well, they got together and they wanted to expose me. Well, everyone was listening to them expose each other, and I guess they wanted to play a game and try to expose me. And they found out that I knew that both of them was working behind the scenes, and one person just lied to me and said he didn't get my information out. But when I asked him a factual question that I knew it was a fact, he lied, and he played cahoots. But see, the checkmate is on them. And the most pitiful thing about this, Ryan, is that we talk about topics and issues. I would never go cross line. I mean, this is stalking. When someone tries to hear, where does that person live at? I hear something in the background. Or I need to get this guy's number because I want to tell the whole world his real name. I know he's being anonymous, but I'm going to tell his real name anywhere. And then I'm going to start telling what his family member name. That is totally crazy, Vern. This is what this internet has came up to do. Now, luckily, I protected myself because I don't want to have to say this, but this terminates. I had to use a little street smarts. I had to. But if I would have just been genuine and then sometimes you can't be genuine because people will take your information and, you know, you can't be open. So if you have nuts out here, if you're, I guess, it's really not the type of person that you are, but there's certain ways, and we talk about this all the time, and I think that when I come back on the air, and you need to start ways to protect yourself. For instance, if you have a website, even with my business website, people can look at my, there's ways that you have to pay a little bit more extra money to, when you have your website up, to make sure you make your information, the person who registered that website, private, because if you go to a website, I can go to a website just click in your website address, and it gives you all your personal information on whoever registered. If you're paying for that website, you can get that, but you have to pay a little bit more. So there's ways to protect yourself. If you have to use a dummy phone, or if you have to block your number out, or you know, things of that nature, you have to do it because people are doxing people, basically pulling up your documents. And I'm just saying this. If you know a person doesn't want their stuff out there at that person, you know, at that specific time, why are you trying to initiate that? Let that individual initiate that themselves. You know, it's crazy. So, you know, you got to watch out for yourself because people will try to hurt you. Now, people will say, well, they don't get sensitive. We heard the best people on these airways and say, it really doesn't bother me, but their actions show that it does bother them. It does bother them. I even had to, you know, backtrack myself because I'm laughing. But I had to backtrack myself and says, well, does cyberbullying or cyberstalking, does that really exist? And guess what? People will try to make that stuff come true. It's different than, you know, when we was growing up back in the day, bullying was up close and personal. But people will try to bully you, find your name. You know, if you have some kids on Facebook, they'll take your kids' pictures. You know, look up your kids, make YouTube videos demeaning your kids and everything. And you don't even want your kids to be involved in this. So you have to have a shield of, listen, I have me an email address for my personal business, my resumes, people I call, that's my legit. But you got to have a whole dummy world out here if you want to get in that, because you have to fight for them. There's certain things that you have to say, well, certain things I'm going to give up and put these walls up so no, I'm protect myself. And there's certain things that you have to, you know, of course, be genuine about, because you don't want to be a fake, but you just have to protect yourself. So lucky these two people think that they have my information, and I'm saying on the event show, I'm laughing at them. No, I was too street smart. I know all of their information, and they don't know none of mine, factually. So on BTR, as I ended, I have checkmate on them, factually. And it's the sad to say that why would people try to do me like that when I always talk about issues, never worry about their real name, never worry about their real number. You know, you have some host or, you know, for instance, you know, a person's going to say that my number and name and number doesn't register on their house phone when actually it does. When a person says, you know, the person's going to call you right now who gave me the information, and they called me, and I got their number, you know, it's amazing. So I'm just want, you know, everybody to know you have to watch out for this. I mean, even with this several months ago, people are starting to have classes on this Internet, and I'm going to use my recordings. I may give a lecture on this one day in the future because it's funny. You have these people thinking that they're saying my information and exposing me, but when I give a lecture and when the facts come out, it's going to be a big laugh. It's a big checkmate. And it's sad that 50-some-year-old people are acting like those 12-year-old kids. I would never, Vernon, I'm quite sure you've made me mad. I've emailed you before, but I would never get to, maybe if I've grown up, I'm not that psychotic to try to find your real name or try to jot down your real number. If I wanted your real number, I'll screen your call and say, oh, I emailed you, I'll exchange numbers to you. But I never would do nothing like that, me personally, because it wasn't for me to do. But you have people out here like that. And these are the pros and cons. So if I, and factually, this is why they know that it's the joke is on them. If they had my real name, they would get my Facebook, have my kids' name. They would riddle on your show all about my kids and laugh and joke. They would have my address. They would know all the things I've worked in the past, You know, they would know that, but they don't. So factually, they don't know. But when they got each other's name, one person just give them all this other person's information. I'm not even asking for it. They know all each other. Soon they got their real name. They got all the information. But see, they can't get it from me because they the jokes is on them. So I'm saying all this and making this time is not to focus. I'm giving to the topic. One other thing before I go. Well, not go. I'm going to put myself on mute. Memory. You said association. Everything is about associating. That's one good thing. Sometimes we can associate our emotions to an event or how we felt about an event. Emotions in memory is good, important. You know, sometimes we can remember how we felt about a situation, but sometimes when something physical, like if we have a sore toothache, you know, we don't, you know, we can remember the sore toothache. We can remember, but we can't actually feel that pain of that toothache. But if something made us feel sad and something made us feel happy and we look back at it, we can have that sense of that feeling at that prominent moment. So emotion and using your senses and memory and association. Association is just saying, just like in computers, something represents another thing. Symbols, that's all it is. Different syntaxes and certain things. Certain things represent something. Little catchy phrases. That's why sometimes rhyming and making things out of, you know, or abbreviating certain things, you know, can help your memory out. So that's all I got to say so far, Brian. Thank you for listening to me.
All facts. That was a mouthful, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I thought you were going to stop me there, but I'm quiet now. I'm listening to you, though.
That was a mouthful. I missed about 2 minutes in there, right toward the end there, because Skype disconnected me. I had to call back in. But that was quite.
Well, I was just talking about the memory and association. Yeah, really, really quick. I was talking about the memory and association, how you associate, and we can use our emotions to help us remember. If you just look at, if you can think in the past, and when at a certain moment you felt happy, if you think about that, you can try to feel that same happiness. Or if you think about something funny, emotions and memory is good. And using your senses and memory. That's basically what I was saying. Yeah?
Anything else?
No, just association and representation, that's all. And memory. That's it.
Cool. I'm going to go on to another thing now here, which was interesting, yeah, this week. So I'm going to shift topics, okay? Revealed hundreds of words to avoid using online if you don't want the government spying on you. And they include pork, cloud, and Mexico, and Blog Talk Radio. I made up the Blog Talk Radio, folks. The headline didn't say that. The Department of Homeland Security has been forced to release a list of keywords and phrases it uses to monitor social networking sites and online media for signs of terrorists or other threats against the U.S. The intriguing, the list includes, well, this was awkward, I think someone made a mistake there, probably wasn't proofread. The intriguing list includes obvious choices such as attack, Al-Qaeda. Now, see, that's interesting. That's one of the things, the types of things that bothers me, is if you want to find out more about Al-Qaeda, you can't, you got to be careful about using that word. Because it's on the list to look out for. You know, Mike, I gave you a nice long rant. I'm going to request that you shh and let me rant here a little bit. But Al-Qaeda, you know, you want to look at homemade bombs, find out what people put together and what they're doing on it. Not that you want to make them, but you want to understand them. That could be a list released under the Freedom of Information request. The information sheds new light on how government analysts are instructed to patrol the Internet, searching for domestic and external threats. The words are included in the department's 2011 Analysts Desktop Binder used by workers at the National Operations Center, which instructs workers to identify media reports that reflect adversely on DHS and response activities. People need to understand that this is, I don't know what it is. I want to try and find it. People need to understand that when someone tells you, when someone out there says, I ain't got nothing to hide, you shouldn't have to worry about that. Whether you have anything to hide or not, it's not the government's job to be spying on you and me for no reason. I'll put this desktop binder in the chat room, the link to it. I haven't looked through all the stuff. Maybe we'll take a second here to kind of look through this and see what it has to say. One of the things that seems to be true to me is that it's the way things get put together and structured, what people do with information, the interpretations that they make that are dangerous. So you're going down the internet and you want to look up something, and I think the amount of information generated, the amount of traffic that goes across the internet on a daily basis, in real time and everything, it's almost like a crapshoot to try and get really useful stuff. So I'm sure these guys hone in on certain things, certain connections, certain people, and it could be triggered by who knows what, the simplest of things. But see, if you wind up being the one that triggers the warning bell for no reason, for some innocuous reason, then you could wind up being forever tagged. Now, our government will go ahead and tell us that, look at all the terrorism that we've in fact stopped. But is that true, and how do we know? We live in a day and age when people can say anything, and they do. We live in a day and age of mystery, as Michael Hood brought up, what happened to that flight. I don't know. See, what is it that stops us from interactively getting engaged with our government and trying to put a stop to this? Are we so afraid? There's that bumper sticker. Years ago, I went to many political events, not particularly events to run for as candidates, but I used to do political shows. And I used to sell merchandise and stuff. And there was that bumper sticker that was always out there. I love my country, but I fear my government. Something's wrong with this picture. When people fear their government, when their government is looking out for them, when their government has the secret spying agency that could make you or I disappear in the middle of the night. Will it happen? It certainly could. People have disappeared, I'm sure, in the middle of the night. Do I know anybody? I don't know that I know anyone. But the problem is, I say that, now you start to get in the realm of superstition and people start to get scared. And pretty soon, there's so many weird rumors and stuff going on out there. But I've thought about this a lot. I think about it a lot when they say that they're checking all of our, they're monitoring all of our internet activity, our phone activity, things like that. Because, I'm interested in a lot of stuff. There was that one gal, I can't remember, quite a few months back, that all of a sudden they showed up at the house. Her husband was trying to buy a pressure cooker, a new pressure cooker. Legitimately so. So now you can't even buy pressure cookers because of the Boston Marathon bombing a couple years ago now. Time goes by so quickly. all brought to you by a government that claims to protect you. Did I say gal again tonight? Someone got on me when I used that with last week as a sexist statement on the Marissa Alexander case. When I said that gal, in fact, it was, I remember who it was. It was our, you know, my favorite friend. I have to go back and listen to that one. Shame on me. Whoever offended saying gal, just call me a guy. You guys, you gals. I know it was Beasley last week. He went on and on. He called in and I said gal, and he called that sexist and went off and on a tangent, and I muted him. When I brought him back up, he says, "You mean I was muted this whole time? Why do you do that?" And then he hung up on me and took off. I do it because he was just interrupting. I couldn't get my thought out. But our government's spying on us. Our government's spying, you know, nothing new. It's been doing it for years. But we see, do we have a higher level of tolerance for this kind of spying? Looking into our daily, everyday lives. And then by the same token, I ran across this one today that was, you know, it's okay to spy on us. But I had not seen this one before. I'm going to bring in something, another one that I like here. But it was where Holder is resisting a Freedom of Information Act request, which I just thought was just, listen, we're supposed to have an appearance of impropriety, you know, they're supposed to get out there, and it's supposed to all be above board. Here it was. Holder begs, this is red flag news. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Red flag news, I'm not acquainted with it. I have not vetted this piece. So is it irresponsible for me to bring it up? Attorney General Eric Holder and his Department of Justice have asked the federal court to indefinitely delay a lawsuit brought by the watchdog group Judicial Watch. The lawsuit seeks the enforcement of open record requests relating to Operation Fast and Furious, as required by law. Judicial Watch had filed on June 22, 2012, a Freedom of Information Act request seeking all documents relating to Operation Fast and Furious, and specifically all records subject to claim of executive privilege invoked by President Barack Obama on or about June 20, 2012. The administration has refused to comply with Judicial Watch's Freedom of Information Act request. And in mid-September, the group filed a lawsuit challenging Holder's denial. The lawsuit remains ongoing, but within the past week, President Barack Obama's administration filed what's called a motion to stay the suit. Such a motion is something that, if granted, would delay the lawsuit indefinitely. Do we have a right to know what these guys are doing up there? President protected by some sort of executive privilege. I thought that we lived in a country where, you know, our leader was supposed to represent us. And everything was supposed to be out in the open. One, you're on Blog Talk Radio. Well, I don't know if 111's going to talk. You know, it's something that's troubled me about municipalities a lot. Our municipalities, the people that work for us.
Hello?
Yes. Who am I speaking with?
This is me. I'm still here.
No, I know you're there, Mike, but I've got another one. I'm going to mute you so that there's no question. 111. Well, they might have inadvertently pushed the ones. But this has troubled me. It's troubled me at the local level. You want to bring suit against your local county government for something, it's troubling. You know, they've got the best defense money can buy on the public taxpayer. And I understand why you have to, why you try and limit the number of suits that people can bring against elected officials, because you don't want your elected officials to be sued for everything every time they turn around. Maybe they couldn't get anything done. But I've often felt, too, that maybe there needs to be some accountability for their actions. You know, maybe
so
it's like, you know, we can be a full... Hello?
Yeah. Do you think they should take them to jail?
Do you think we should take our elected officials to jail?
No, I'm asking you, yeah. I'm asking you. Because,
no,
you know,
I think there needs to be, at some level, there needs to be a certain accountability of elected officials. Because if you face no consequences for, now people will say, and rightfully so, there's always the right to impeach someone for malfeasance. And I guess, you know, that they have acted not on behalf of the people, but with malicious intent. And clearly we have that there, but, you know, if you ever go to city council meetings or board of supervisor meetings, I don't know where you live and stuff, it's kind of like these become the new royalty. People don't challenge them. You know, they get away with almost anything, and there's no personal accountability for what they in fact pass.
Well,
and I think
what you're looking at as leaders, when they're behind that stage, you don't look at them as leaders. They're human beings just like you. They're representatives and they're spokespersons, and the people have to let know that they're no higher. Without them, I mean, without the people, they wouldn't be. So that's how I look at it. But it reminds me, the reason why I was asking this question is because Eric Holder, and it's about Fast and the Furious, he did not go to Congress. They subpoenaed him, and he did not go for a subpoena. Do you think, is that a situation you think he should be accountable? In contempt of Congress,
we don't have a
and you think he should be?
Certainly do. I think he should be accountable. The administration is, you know, we have a Freedom of Information Act for a reason. You know, the people have a right to know. I don't know that there's, you know, there again, I'm going to tell you what, if there's something at the level of national security behind Fast and Furious, there's something going on there that people should be concerned about. Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton said that Holder's and Obama's desire to continually hide these Fast and Furious documents is ironic now that they're so gung-ho on gun control. Yeah, I think I have a strong belief that our elected officials should, in fact, be accountable to us. Absolutely.
Well, they have to be. I mean. Well, the Constitution says that. See, the problem is it's our psychological problem. The fact is, how is everything is set up? It's supposed to be just like that, Brian. I mean, I understand it's supposed to be like that. But we don't demand that. See, we don't look at them as leaders. When we elect them, they don't do what the hell they're supposed to do, because everything's supposed to be checks and balances. And if they don't do something that we don't like, we can get them out of there quick. But we look at them as just leaders. They can't be untouchable. They have this, they have that. So...
But here's the attorney general, someone, you know, the law enforcer, the land. In fact, there was one that, and it's been pushed around all week about the Republicans want to stop, but want to export the wives of servicemen. Really, what they did is they wanted to pass legislation that requires that the executive branch have the judicial branch, the executive branch, have the attorney general enforce the laws of the land. You know, if you're not going to enforce the laws of the land, don't have them. You know, I was saying earlier, someone said I was the orthodox libertarian. But if you don't want to enforce a law, then you shouldn't have it. A law that's unenforceable is kind of meaningless. Now, I'm not a big one in favor of a lot of laws. I think we need the minimal number of laws we can get by with is what I'd be in favor of. But that being said, if you have a law that you're not going to enforce, why have it in the first place? It's kind of meaningless. It's like maybe we're getting to the point, and I really don't care. I don't care whether we legalize marijuana or not. I think it's been kind of silly. The laws regarding it have been silly. I think that it was something we could have dealt with easily, either just delete it from the Federally Controlled Substances Act or something. But we haven't done it that way, and the people can demand that that kind of stuff be done.
Texas is starting to talk about it now, you know it's about to be nationwide. Texas is starting to hinder it, talking about decriminalizing, even the governor saying it, not fully legalizing it. So you know that state's starting to talk about it.
Well, Texas, you know, and people are talking about
yeah,
the tax
they're
money.
Trying to decriminalize
I don't know
it
that
now.
It brings in all that much tax money. It's literally in the millions for government entities spending in the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars. I'm just trying to see what's going on in the chat room here. Why is the plane missing? Call me up, Robert. What about the plane that disappeared? The Bermuda Islands. I thought it was interesting in that thing is that it disappeared, and here it's a week later, and now we're finding out that it was tracked on a GPS or something, transponder. And it went the other way, and they had all these tracking signals, and they were looking in the wrong direction. Something doesn't add up. I don't know what to believe half the time anymore about what gets put out there in the news media regarding what's going on.
If they can't find it, they might have landed it somewhere on another island or secret landed somewhere. I don't know.
Hey,
right, they might have went to North Korea. What do you think?
For all the people out there that can't make it, here's one for you. Here's one for you. You all need to leave the United States of America and go to Switzerland. Swiss to pay basic income, 2,500 francs per month to every adult. Now, you know, that work or not. Hey, we can all just go to Switzerland and we apply to Switzerland. Switzerland may start paying every adult, whether they work or not, a salary of over $2,000 per month based on the idea that their citizens will have more time to devote to things they are intrinsically interested in. Instead of spending the majority of their time worrying about how they're going to survive, as many individuals with entry-level positions find it hard to meet their needs. The income initiative promises every Swiss citizen a living wage so they can always survive without basic financial worry. We certainly need that here in the United States in the blog talk radio community. There are so many people that listen a long time. I'm going to give 1111 another try here, the other blocked one number. Okay, they don't want to talk. Somehow they pushed the hand up button. And if you want to call in 111, hang up and call back in and put your hand up. I wonder how it's going to bode for Switzerland. Maybe they're making enough money off the Swiss banks. The 2,500 francs would work out to be an income of 30,000 Swiss francs per year. Statistics released by the European Union in 2002 showed that Switzerland was the third most expensive country in Europe after Norway and Iceland to live in. Switzerland currently has a population of 8.02 million. You'd certainly be in a small country there, equivalent to large cities like San Francisco. Well, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if we might not be better off to do that in the United States. You know, when you look at the amount we pay in taxes, you know, and for what it's worth, it's the rich that pay the taxes. You get down there, like, what is it, 48% of the people pay no taxes. You look at the amount the federal government spends, and if you define fair is every citizen, every man, woman, and child paying the exact amount, an equal amount in the taxes with respect to what the country spends, whether you can afford it or not. That's a different issue and different question. You can get into that. Turns out that this country's spending, I think, around on the order of approximately $10,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States, $10,000, $11,000. Then you throw in the state taxes. Just think, if you had a family of four, the amount that's being spent by government based on something like that is around $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Might people not be better off if they got the money directly? Which I'm actually going to shift into something else here I thought of, and I might pick this one up again tomorrow. But I want to talk a little bit about the Obamacare right now, not so much in terms of the details. There's a lot of problems with that. You know, it's been talked about this week. But today is the 16th. The enrollment period closes at the end of March here. On the 31st, and like Social Security, not Social Security, like Medicare, if you're not enrolled, you won't be able to enroll in insurance or any of the plans until they open again in October. Now that's interesting, that's fascinating to me from the standpoint that it's coming up quick. There's two things about it I think are fascinating. It's coming up quick. I think there's going to be a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of people that, because you can enroll too, but if you haven't made an payment, you're not insured either. And that's a mere, just a little over 2 weeks away. And I don't know how many people are really thinking about that and aware of it. And if you're not enrolled in an insurance plan, now, you know, you certainly can get overseas insurance. That may be sufficient. I know I've been told that by one of the listeners that you can get offshore insurance policies. I don't know if our government will consider that that useful or consider it a valid policy. But we're going to start to see what happens in another 2 weeks, 2 weeks and a day or so. Because now we're going to have a whole period of time that people will be insured or not. And what's crazy about that is if people are not insured, you know, just if you pay the my understanding is even paying the penalty does not grant you insurance, that you're technically responsible for your own insurance bills. 2 weeks away, I haven't kept up on it. Not only that, there are a bunch of exemptions they were talking about the other day on the radio. Actually had those printed out, exemptions for people that had their insurance policies canceled, that were insured, and when they had their policies canceled because they didn't comply with the Affordable Care Act, they were told, well, you know, we'll give you a stay. We'll extend your period of time for enrollment. So it's interesting. We've got a whole lot of people that haven't signed up for insurance. It's coming around the corner. And when the exchanges closes, I wonder if they're going to extend the deadlines again. And I think that the total number of people that have signed up is including those that lost their policies. This is another manipulation of information and data. I think they say 10 million have signed up, but 10 million have 4 million. 4 to 6 million of those 10 million that are signed up are people that lost their policies to begin with, that were insured in the beginning. And the whole reason for doing this whole thing, when it was passed, what, in 2010, was to deal with a population of any place between 40 to 60 million people that were uninsured. Now, if it's 40 million and you've enrolled 10, right, that's 10%. If it's 40 million people that are uninsured and you've enrolled 4, that's 10% of those that you wanted to enroll. That means, you know, still 90% of them are uninsured, and we're certainly not going to let them die if they wind up in the hospitals, if they wind up in hospitals for medical care. It's going to be interesting to see what comes around the corner with this thing. I've said over many times there are people out there proclaiming that people want the Affordable Care Act to fail because they want the president to fail. You know, I don't particularly care about the president to fail. And I think it will hurt the country if this doesn't work, but I think it's not going to work. I think that people expect something out of it that they're not going to get. I think a lot of people believed that when the Affordable Care Act was passed, that they were going to wind up with health insurance, and it wasn't going to cost them anything. And someone always has to pay, you know, like capitalism or not, like the system or not. Are you going to have your doctors work for nothing? That's not right. People spend a lot of time going to medical school. They acquire a lot of debt. And you're going to tell them, well, you know, just take less. And my understanding is that I know in California, in my local area, there are a lot of doctors that have opted out of the exchange because they're required to take 40% less than they get with Medicare, something like that. I don't have that piece in front of me. So I'm putting that out there for any of you people that aren't insured currently. You got 2 weeks to find a policy. Whether you do or don't, well, I don't know. But then the exchanges and all that stuff closes unless they're, again, they give an extension and they delay it another year or so. Well, so the Swiss do better. Listen, I think that a lot of the insurance is overrated anyway. I think it's important. Let's see, it's written to not work. The ultimate outcome was always single payer. But, you know, will single payer work in this country? And there again, we have a lot of people who say that they don't like it. You know, they didn't want it passed in the first place. Another example of a government that's not set up to give the people what they request or what they want because they know what's better for us. But anyway, if you're going to get insurance, you got 2 weeks to do it, and you need to make sure you get that payment in. If you're not paid and you haven't received your first premium, you are not insured. So if you're going to do it, do it. Here's one that I thought was interesting since I was talking about the NSA earlier, is Bill Gates. Edward Snowden is no hero. I thought that one was interesting. Bill Gates here, what he says is, among computer types, you'll find many admirers of National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden, but Bill Gates is not one of them. In an interview with Rolling Stone, Jeff Goodell, the Microsoft co-founder and richest man in the world, did not mince words when asked if he considered whether Snowden is a hero or a traitor. I think he broke the law, so I certainly wouldn't characterize him as a hero, Gates said. If he wanted to raise the issues and stay in the country and engage in civil disobedience or something of that kind, or if he had been careful in terms of what he had released, then it would fit more of the model of, okay, I'm really trying to improve things. You won't find much admiration from me. So do you agree with Bill Gates? Gates said that there has to be a debate about government snooping, but indicated that some aspects of government surveillance are best left secret. I wonder if Microsoft is in collusion with the government. Microsoft has seen quite a bit of controversy regarding its alleged cooperation with the NSA. Last July, The Guardian reported that Microsoft had aided both the NSA and FBI in accessing user data. I wonder how many of you Skype users out there is the NSA snooping on? Has Microsoft, since they now own Skype, calls now unencrypted and going directly through the to the government so they can spy on you? Snowden is a whistleblower. He should have 100% immunity. And Snowden is most likely not his real name, is what I told him by the Swiss and Germans. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. So a lot of different opinions on this. Bill Gates thinks that Snowden's kind of didn't give a true story about that. He's not really in favor of him. Here's one that was interesting that has nothing to do with the NSA. Bible Belt leads the nation in consumption of, can you guess what? Anyone out there want to take a guess? I'll look in the chat room. What does the Bible Belt lead the nation in consumption of? Quick, I'll give you a minute or so to write it down. You could probably do a search and it'll come up. Anyone have an idea what the Bible Belt leads the nation in consumption of? Gay porn. Now, you know, here's one of the problems that I run into. I have all these news pieces. This was from Pathios.com. I'll post it in the chat room. But the longer I'm around, I don't know who to believe regarding anything. Because, you know, as one friend of mine would say, is why is the information being generated? How do I know I can trust them? You know, maybe they just want to pound on religious people in the South. See, you can post anything out there. I mean, it's all over the place. There's so much popping up every day that, and I keep asking this question: how do people know? How do people know? But I'll tell you what, this will go out there like wildfire. Now, you know, I don't know. It says, folks in the Bible Belt watch more gay pornography than anywhere else in the nation, according to new numbers released by Pornhub, one of the world's largest or one of the world's biggest porn sites. Pornhub reports that the majority of states with a high percentage of gay viewers is in the South. According to the numbers, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Georgia lead the South in gay porn consumption. And the state with the highest percentage of gay porn viewers is the nation. Highest number of viewers in the nation is Mississippi with 5.6%. Now, the question is, is porn up to an agenda? They have an agenda. You know, are the numbers legitimate? 5.6% in Mississippi, which, by the way, is supposed to be one of the most religious.
Why are you questioning those numbers? And it's interesting to me because Mississippi is also a real racial state too, and it's real. You know, it's one of the poorest.
I don't know that you're right or wrong, Mike. I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, I can accept them or reject them. I don't, you know, I don't have a particular dog in the fight. I think it's interesting, but I think that with so much stuff that goes out, that no one checks, no one vets. I don't know how they did the study, how they gathered it, or anything like that. You know,
When something happens, and if it's a fact. Right, but usually when something happens and if it's real, it's blasted out everywhere. It's everybody knows about it. But when something's not true, you may read it and everyone doesn't know about it. For instance, I'm going to give you a perfect example. They were getting, what's her name?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, her name, it just slipped my mind. Republican, she's the artist.
Get off that cheap porn site, I'll tell you.
Well, no, yeah. Her name just slipped my head for a minute, but anyway, I'll get back to it. But anyways, they said she was racist to a black female pilot, and it was blasted that she was racist, and she made a big scene, but it was a satire, you know, and she wasn't a woman like that. You know, of course she seems like she's racist, but it wasn't. So what I'm saying is if she would have did that in real life, they would have blasted all over the news. They would have just blasted all over the news. But you heard it on, you know, tidbits here, and this is what they done. And you find out, you do your research, it was a satire. It was an article that someone wrote as a satire, and then people said it was true. So, you know.
Yeah, well, do you believe that Mississippi has the highest number of gay porn viewers?
Ann Coulter, that's what her name is. Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter.
I don't know why. Now, listen, it'd be easier for me to buy this report if it said just Mississippi has the highest number of porn viewers.
Right, and that's telling because it's supposed to be the more religious. And unfortunately,
see,
they have the old Southern traditional ways and gays.
Or highest number of porn viewers. Do you have any reason to believe that Mississippi has a higher number of homosexuals in that state than any other state?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they may be undercover homosexuals. I'm just saying, let's go back to what your first topic is. The Internet kind of let people can do certain things. I don't know. It may be someone who's undercover. They may want to look at that act.
No, would you
ask,
but you asked
I don't know.
I had a hard time believing this. I didn't say I had a hard time believing it. So I said, I just don't know. In this day and age of site after site
after site. Well, it can be proven, though. But see, that thing can be proven because they can show you their raw data numbers. They can show you their calculations. The same when I write a program, they can show you the same thing as Blog Talk will give you your switchboard. They can give you the raw factual data numbers.
Yeah, well I'm going to say it another way, Mike. I'm going to say it another way. I have not taken the time to verify the reports, the numbers, the studies, or whatever. It certainly may be true. It certainly may not be true. I am one that tends to be hesitant to run with the first thing that's put out there. I don't really care if everyone in Mississippi 100% likes to watch gay porn. Totally irrelevant to me. Let them do what they're going to do.
Right, but you would ask yourself, right, exactly. Yeah, let them do what they're going to do. But the whole article, when you give me the context of the whole hour, what surprises me is that it's more, for instance, why California is not number one, who's very liberal, and Mississippi, who's very southern and opposite. That's all. We just look at the facts and we can say, hold up, it's kind of surprising there. And we say, okay. Wow. So I would look at that day and say, okay, Mississippi, they're getting liberal. People like to go to porn sites and touch here and not touch there. And they're not just traditional,
maybe being Christian, brings out the gay in you. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, there's a lot of divorce.
I question all sorts of data. I question out the report that someone, in fact, put out this week. Not that I question the data, but it was a computer simulation about, explaining the planet still heating, in spite of the fact that apparently temperatures have stabilized over the last 12, 14 years. You've seen no appreciable growth. I want to see the raw data. Somehow, if it's important to me, and I can see. Listen, it's easy to say anything on the internet.
Right, but yeah, I know exactly. But you got to watch.
I don't care. Everyone in Mississippi could be gay and like into gay porn. As far as I'm concerned, I don't have a dog in that fight. I'm not defending Mississippi. I'm not defending the Southern Belt. See, everyone in the South loves gay porn.
I just don't want you to question the data. You may question the conclusion, but don't question the data.
What I'm trying to point out to you is here's something easy to put out. There's a story on the internet on a well-written, nice site, show a nice glossy map. I don't know how accurate the data is.
Okay, right. So basically,
that's
so the order
saying,
for you to
you know,
prove
it's,
that,
it's
so hold on, hold on, right. I mean,
what I'm saying is,
if I have a site, you mean to tell me I'm in computers, and you mean to tell me, let's say if I have a porn site, ABC porn site, and you're telling me that if I'm an ABC company, and as a company, I give my actual numbers from my data and present them to the world, you're going to deny and say that's fact versus someone else taking
that.
My data. Okay, exactly. So what are you saying?
I didn't say. I don't know what you're talking about. What it's saying, this is you know what they say in the court of law, you know, hearsay? You know what hearsay is?
Well, no. There's a difference between data
you know
is fact.
What hearsay is? You know, I am getting a lot of flack in the chat room for talking to you, but you know what hearsay is.
Why are you getting a lot of flack? Yes, I know what hearsay is.
Okay,
hearsay is not fact.
It says, did you hear what I read? Pornhub reports that the majority of states with a high percentage of gay viewers is in the South. Okay, now what it says, when I'm reading an article on a website that doesn't say we report from our research, they're saying such and such over here reports this. Isn't that secondhand information?
Right. So that's firsthand information. I don't know why it seems like you're kind of getting obsessed around it.
If Pornhub was, I'm getting a lot of flack because they see that you're not listening.
No, I am
listening,
Brian.
Listen. Bible Belt.
You're mad.
Bible Belt leads the nation in gay porn. That's great with me. You know, they're all right with Jesus and God.
Okay, right. But what I'm saying is, I can hear you closely. I thought it was someone else reporting on Pornhub, but you're saying Pornhub is the source.
No, I'm saying it's Pathos.com has its piece, Bible Belt leads the nation in consumption of gay porn. The second paragraph says, Pornhub reports. They're not saying that, you know, Pathos.com is not saying it's our study, that a majority of the states with a high percentage of gay viewers is in the South. I haven't, you know, I can click on the report and look at it. I just said that in passing. Here's Pornhub. I can go and look. I had not looked up the data itself. I haven't read the report itself. I can go there and do that. It was just a statement made in passing.
Right, so basically checking the data, let's see.
Here's our gay users, states with legalized gay marriages, and they got a bunch of stuff. Gay users, states where gay marriage is illegal, and they got a list of them. Stay tuned for more insights in the world of porn and porn viewing habits, blah, blah, blah. It says, if it's true what you say about married couples not having sex, then many are still turning to porn for sexual satisfaction. Pornhub, and this is on Pornhub sites, recently got together with our friends at BuzzFeed to bring you our latest porn statistics. They asked us if the same might be true about gay married couples. Do the states with legalized gay marriage watch more gay porn than states where it is illegal? The quick answer, yes, at 4.41%, states with legalized gay marriages watch 7% more porn than states without it. The results get trickier once you start looking at the map state by state. The majority of states with a high percentage of gay viewers in the South, where gay marriage is illegal in all states. Dixie loves dicks so much that the percentage of gay viewers for every single state in the South is higher than the average of legal gay marriages states.
Right. When you read that data, the first data that you gave, the first information, it was more specific. The second is more general.
The second information I'm giving is from the site that did the study. They read their stats and hits.
Right. Exactly.
Some of the things that we don't know about.
Right.
I'm going to tell you right. I'm going to tell you, for all I know, see, I don't see that broken out here in terms of what it means. Is maybe the gay porn that's being watched is straight men like to watch
Well, the conclusion of the data is you. When you say what something means, as they teach it in school, people can read the same data and come with the different conclusions. And you just, but you can't question the data. You may question the conclusion that someone may come from that data.
Yeah,
but the data is the data. That was my whole saying.
Mike, you're all over the place. You're one of the hardest guys I have to listen to, but that's okay. Yeah, so we're going to go into overtime, Iggy Mom. Yeah, anyone that wants to call in and get on the board.
Mom, all over the place. I don't understand.
I said is I brought up the report originally, and I just said in passing, I says, you know, I without reading, I don't, you know, may it could be true or not. And then you went all over the place in terms of why would I have a hard time believing this. I was just trying to make a point that for the most part, most people that I run into will report whatever they hear on the internet is fact. 661.
Right, but you have to watch out because as we can do information, people will take some data and give their own points of view and have their different, you know, different websites.
I know, but
I'm
not talking about what people will do this, there, or whatever. And what I'm saying is, as I brought up a piece and I made the comment, well, there again, I'm reporting on something that I have not really checked out, I haven't checked the data or something else, and your comment was back is why do I have such a hard time believing the gays would watch the South would watch gay porn? I just don't know. I have not followed up on the thing. 666.
Right.
Good God Almighty, what the hell are you doing, Vern?
Hold on a second. I leave you this fucking empty head, Vern, as punishment for your muting.
Wow.
He's all yours. And I hope you stick with him for fucking weeks. Because you know what? When you're pulling your hair out, what's left of it.
I know everything about you. You know nothing about me. I have checked.
I'm about to mute myself and you get this. This empty head is my present to you. So
I'm calm tonight. I'm not getting
when you apologize to me, when you apologize for muting me, you'll get some intelligence back on your show. And Kat, hang up. Don't even talk to Vern. Leave him with the fucking empty head. It's what he deserves.
Good God, Vern. What the hell are you doing, Vern? You said what you said. Let's just move on.
What the hell are you two doing?
No. Kat, don't engage him. Hang up now. Leave him with the empty head.
If you listen to the conversation back, you were saying you don't know what you would have believed, and we were just having a dialogue conversation back.
You
I understand all of it very well.
You're a fucking idiot. No one can talk to you.
That's why you gave me your real name. You don't know mine. None of y'all know my real name. I checkmate, baby. Checkmate.
Mute him.
Checkmate.
Vernon,
are you
there?
I don't know what you mean by checkmate. Go ahead. He's muted.
Oh, Lord, I tell you what. We watched a movie called the Dallas Buyers Club. Have you seen it?
Kat, stop talking to this man. Leave him with the empty head. It's his punishment. He's going to walk the fucking green mile. Leave him. Hang up now. I'm serious. Hang up now. Leave him with nothing but that empty head.
A few minutes. I'm going to give him
no,
a few.
No, don't even talk to him. Leave him with the empty head.
Lord have mercy. It hurts my brain to come here.
Mm-mm.
Well, don't.
I love
my man here, One Angry Jew, is I love you. I think it's so great. This is worth every second of having had Mike on.
You
just
let
to
him
hear.
Walk the green mile, Kat. Hang up now. Don't talk to him. Leave him with
that's
an empty
it.
Head.
That's it. You let him run your life, Kat. You let him run your life.
Listen to him begging for somebody intelligent to talk to. Leave him with the empty head. Let him have the empty head.
I love it. That's
100%
eating,
of the time.
That's been eating
he wants
you
to
the
mute,
whole show. I love
he wants
it.
To mute me. He wants to mute
I
me.
Love,
you leave him.
I
leave you the
shit.
Empty head. You get the empty
I
head.
It.
That's
I
what you get.
Okay. I think I'm gonna
and now I'm
to
muted.
To the Burn Show that's because good. This is like porn for the brain here. Anyway, Vern, have you seen the Dallas Buyers Club, the movie?
No, I have not, Kat.
Now, it was based on true events. Matthew McConaughey, you know, won the Academy Award for his role as in that movie. And it's about a man in 1985 who contracts HIV. And it's about his, back in that time, the drug companies were in a war as to get the drugs on the market. But they used the people who had HIV as guinea pigs. It's really, I mean, if we knew, I mean, just listening to what the drug companies, what the FDA was doing at that time, they were given this drug called AZT, and it was killing people. But because they gave it in such massive doses, they thought, we really thought at that time, we were being told that this virus could be cured. Well, instead of, in the beginning, instead of dealing with the what was happening to the body, what the damage the virus is doing to the body, they actually thought that the drug companies were trying to come up with this cure-all. Well, that's not what has happened. We've learned to deal with the symptoms of the disease. And this man, who was, he was an electrician, worked for an oil company, and he started a club where he found different suppliers in other parts of the world, like Japan and Mexico, and I think in, I'm not sure where, I forget, but somewhere in Europe. And he actually got the drugs here, and he sold people memberships into a, he did not act as a doctor. He sold them memberships into a drug-buying club. And he really fought the FDA and actually took them to court in San Francisco, and they really did a number on him. It's a true story, and I'm sure it's loosely based on the truth, you know, and actually what happened. Matthew McConaughey got this diary of the man who actually the story is based on. He got the diary from his family in Dallas, and he's the one who actually got the we're not talking about gay stuff, Granny Ganja. It's not about a gay disease. The man's not even gay who was diagnosed with HIV back then, but it was treated as a gay disease in the beginning. And actually, some people who got the disease in hospitals, they were put on in the psychiatric wards. And it goes into all that in the movie. Anyway, it's really, if you want to have a good discussion on this show about how we treated people with HIV in 1985 when it first, you know, was widely diagnosed, as to what's going on today, it's really incredible. It is a damn good movie.
Well, I remember Magic Johnson was diagnosed with the virus, and that guy looks as healthy as ever. He's on.
Yeah,
I've seen him.
He's able to get the best drugs.
I don't know. What are they treating HIV with these days? How are they keeping it at bay? How are they dealing with the symptoms? How do they keep it from progressing?
Well, I'm really not sure how they do. They have far better drugs now than they did in 1985 to deal with the symptoms of HIV.
Why are you giving this man good radio? Why are you giving him any intelligence at all? Leave him with all facts.
You are really bothering.
Leave him with all facts. Let him deal with that empty head. Night after night after night. That's his punishment. He has to walk the green mile. He's got to walk the green mile in a brown head. Give him the empty head.
I've got to let my dog out so y'all can have the mic a few minutes.
And
yes,
no, he's,
dog
he just does not want you talking to me, Cat.
When he's done.
You know, you've been
hang up the phone.
Talk to me
and leave him with an empty head.
He still hasn't gotten over my. By the way, he's the one that left last time. He slammed down.
Leave him with the empty head. I'm going to sleep. Leave him with the empty head. That's it.
That's good. Sleep well. Have a good night's sleep. I hope you sleep well.
The definition of hearsay is anything that's said outside the courtroom. You asked that earlier. That's the point I came in.
Yeah, the definition of hearsay is when Michael Walfax hears it. That's hearsay. Now, you leave him with Michael Walfax, and you leave him with Jackie, leave him with the fucking empty heads, and let him walk the Green Mile by himself.
Thank you. I appreciate you care about me. Really. And I have to let my wife know that tomorrow. She actually had come to your defense tonight. I was talking about how wonderful you were, and she says, "Do you think you're a little bit hard on him?" And I said, you know, it was all before the call tonight. I said, says no, he can take it.
But I missed the earlier part of the show, so I just came in when you were talking about hearsay. No one gave the definition of it.
Yeah, this first, second, and third, you know, and to get it from the horses. I've always thought of hearsay, and that's usually a term you hear here in the court, clearly. But I've always thought of hearsay being second, you know, second-hand, third-hand removed. So not directly from the person that was there. You know, you hear it from someone else. That you hearsay.
Anything can be hearsay. Anything that's said outside the courtroom is hearsay. It's got to be proven. It's not proven, it's hearsay.
That's, I want to see if I've got one to, this is supposedly a true story, or, you know, but it's funny. Whether it's true or not doesn't really matter, but I think you get a kick out of this one, Kat. And this one is, according to news reports, you know, this would be hearsay. I haven't verified this myself. But this is kind of a fun story. According to a news report, a certain private school in Washington recently was faced with a unique problem. A number of 12-year-old girls were beginning to use lipstick and would put it on in the bathroom. That was fine, but after they put on their lipstick, they would press their lips to the mirror, leaving dozens of little lip prints. Every night, the maintenance man would remove them, and the next day, the girls would put them back. Finally, the principal decided that something had to be done. She called all the girls to the bathroom. Now, that must have been a really small school if she got them all in there, but that's neither here nor there. She called all the girls to the bathroom and met them there with the maintenance man. She explained that all these lip prints were causing a major problem for the custodian, who had to clean the mirrors every night. To demonstrate how difficult it had been to clean mirrors, she asked the maintenance man to show the girls how much effort was required. He took out a long-handled squeegee, dipped it in the toilet, and cleaned the mirror with it. Since then, there have been no lip prints on the mirror.
Wow.
And the final line is, there are teachers and there are educators. A cute little story. A little humor, true or not. Now I have
did
to watch
see,
that one. Go ahead.
Did you ever see Pennies from Heaven?
No, I haven't seen that one either.
Steve Martin is married. He's a traveling salesman. And he makes his wife put lipstick on her nipples before he'll have sex with her.
You know, I often think assuming there is a God, I tend to think of human beings like being a channel. There's some 7 billion channels that God tunes in on every day, and has a lot of fun watching all the soap opera, all the drama. Clearly, I wonder what God thinks about his, her, its, whatever creation. Especially
well, I think God
thoughts.
Is the ultimate. He's the ultimate drama queen. I think God loves all this drama. because we all love drama. We feed on drama. Don't you think so?
I certainly do, and I'll tell you, I don't think there's any place that there's more of it than on Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio is a cesspool for the majority of people who are hosts on BTR. It's like some sort of little kingdom where they can control. It's their venue to, you know, seek celebrity. I think it's ridiculous. It's a stage where people can act as moronic as they want to. Thus, we have the L-Fact Show.
Well, you know, this show has been, if you will, guilty of the same melodrama. I got to find one from you that I think you'll appreciate. It was sent to me by a friend of mine that from time to time listens to my shows. And this is something they sent me last week. It's going to take a second to find it. But he says he finally figured out what my show was about. And it was priceless. It's not that one.
I
have to work.
No, I told you what I think your show is about. I think we're your lab rats.
Cat.
Don't tell anybody. I won't tell. I promise. I won't tell anyone.
I have to find this because it was priceless. It was absolutely unbelievable, but where is it? Also, he told me that I should sue some bastard for copyright infringement because he sent me a piece one day, and you know the piece from The Matrix. Is it going to be the red pill or the blue pill? And my comment back to him is, I'll take the purple pill. And all of a sudden he sent me an article that says Huffington Greenwald and the birth of the purple pill media. He said I should sue him for copyright on that. I would if I could get anything out of it. I have to find this one was so good. If I can't find it tonight, I'll do it tomorrow. But I was something to the effect that my show was the voice over for a steaming pile of dog poo. I just thought
I've never that was seen any dog poo steam, and I've seen some dog poo. But I've never seen it steam.
You've never seen steaming dog poo in the park on a cool morning? Huh?
No. Never seen it steam, okay. No.
Well, you know, if the morning's cool enough, you would expect that because it comes from the inside of a dog and whose body temperature is much warmer.
Okay, Vern, I'm hanging up if we're going to be reduced to talking about dog poo.
If we're going to be talking about dog poo, yeah, what, you know, entertainment, nothing but entertainment here. I'll find it later. Maybe I'll have to email it to you. So now I have to watch at the Dallas Buyer Club. It certainly got a lot of good, great reviews, and I'd heard it was based on a. There it is. He says I've discovered your job description, and when I click on the link. It says, you know what happens here. As the landfill burbles with toxic wastes of disintegrating culture, I will be the voiceover. So I'm the voiceover for a landfill burbling with the toxic wastes of disintegrating culture. I thought that was pretty clever.
I think he was insulting your callers, not you.
You know, he may have been. I don't think. 111. I got into. Oh, that's my other one. My 111 that doesn't want to be heard. That didn't put their hand down. I'll leave it open in case they want to say something. But Mike, I've given you a whole bunch of show, and you've definitely. I've just been told that you are what I'm left with. You are what I'm left with. Okay, I hope you hang that one up.
Fucking empty head moron. So that's what you deserve.
I've got a request from Granny to unmute Mike.
Well, tell Granny to come on.
Granny, you are one of my favorites. I have granted your request.
Granny, can you please call in? And Granny can see the unfairness, but I'm quiet. I'm calm because I'm sitting at the top of the hill.
Oh, God.
Granny has declined your request, Kat.
Well.
See, the most funniest thing is.
Granny's vote is canceled out.
You know what? They say the most funniest, ignorant things about me, Vern. But see, Howard let me know what Cat's real name is, and Howard let me know what Ted's name is. But they don't know nothing about me. It's sad, and it's so pitiful. Checkmate.
Mike, I'm sure if they wanted to know something about you, they'd be able to find it. I don't know that they are preoccupied.
No, if they knew my real name, they would blurt it all out all over the airways, and just like I told you. But these are sick. These people are sick. They will go on BTR, go, and she's backing up this gentleman, Howard, who did her the same way. He tried to do me, her, him, and Beasley. And I know more about them. They know nothing about me. And I am going to play some of these recording back and put it off.
There. Granny, I gave Mike most of the show there. I gave him a lot of show. So, Kat, to you I give the mic. Mr. Restricted is no longer has a hot mic.
Can I just mention something real quick?
Sure.
We watched a double feature of the Dallas Buyers Club, which, you know, Matthew McConaughey won the Academy Award for Best Actor for 2013. So we also watched another Matthew McConaughey film, which was extremely disturbing. It's called Killer Joe. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't. I have to go to more movies.
Oh, you might want... I have a rule, sort of like on Friday night, you know, it's the end of the work week and all, and I don't like any Friday night. It's our kind of date night, but I don't want to watch any serial killer or type movies or anything on TV that would be, like a psychological thriller or anything. I like basically, you know, feel good movies and funny movies. You know, my favorite movies are humor, you know, comedies. Killer Joe is about as dark as you can get. It's about a family. They supposedly live in the Dallas area, but the film was shot in New Orleans. And it's about a family, a father, a stepmother, and the man's two children, and they're going to kill the ex-wife for her insurance money. And they hire Matthew McConaughey, who's a Dallas policeman, who is also a contract killer, to kill this ex-wife for $25,000. but they don't have the money, but they think they're going to get a $50,000 insurance policy and they'll pay him off then. And he has met the daughter. She's 21 years old, and she's a virgin. And she has maybe some sort of psychic powers, and he's crazy about her. So he takes her as a retainer fee and takes her virginity, but he falls in love with her. Now, it's a really, really dark comedy. It's about as thick and twisted as a family can get. And the man who wrote it, he won a Pulitzer Prize for writing the movie that Meryl Streep was in recently. I forget, the Osage something. It's about this terrible family in Florida. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's the one with can't remember the name of the movie, but isn't that the one Julia Roberts is in it as well?
Yeah, Meryl Streep plays like this really redneck, you know, crazy old woman who's the matriarch of the family. But this movie, Killer Joe, was a play for years before, and Scott Glenn played Killer Joe. I mean, it's about as dark as you can get. So it was really interesting to see Matthew McConaughey play two distinctly different roles, and he was excellent in both of them.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't realize this is, let's see, the gross. It's $10 million to make it, and it doesn't look like it. It doesn't even look like they made the money back.
On which one?
On Killer Joe.
$10 million
is not very much of a budget for a movie. Cats, they have double features where you're at.
At Cat's House, they do.
All right. Do you serve popcorn too? Well, I'll have to come to Cat's House for movies on the weekend. A little bit far travel for a double feature, but
calling for a lot of rain here today, and it didn't. We were supposed to have like these really bad thunderstorms, so we planned to stay home because it's nothing like. I mean, it's crazy here when storms because all our stoplights go out and people drive crazy, so we don't like to go out during the storms, but it didn't storm, so we stayed home and watched those movies.
Well, cool. Do you watch them on demand? What do you use? Do you use Vudu or one of those services? Or
no, we use we have both services from Netflix where we get them in the mail, but we also can watch them on demand. But we a friend of ours loaned us Killer Joe, and the other one we got from Netflix.
I remember when I was with Netflix from the beginning. Right now I've just got a streaming account, but I was with them pretty much from the beginning when you could carve out four movies at a time, and I think they were $10 a month. And I kept that account for years because they went from the four to three. And now they're, I think it's $7.99 for one movie out at a time. And it says as many as you can watch, but there's a limit to the total number. I haven't gone back and read the contract. Again, in a long time, but I just signed up for them because they have House of Cards, and my wife hadn't seen that, and they just released the second season, and that one's pretty good. I don't. Have you watched that one?
House of Cards. Is it?
Yes.
What is it on?
Kevin Spacey.
Oh well, I saw the British. You know, that was a British series before it.
Yes.
Francis Burkert, I saw that. That's one that we want to watch. You can actually get that on demand.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. In fact, someone told me that the British one was actually better than this one, but this one's, having not seen the British one, I had no expectations, and so I've watched this one, and it's been fun. I should watch the British one next and see what it does, but You know, that's where I did the piece earlier where a young friend said that you want to see what, you know, about all the deal cutting and all that stuff in Washington and why it's so corrupt. And it's still one of those things that fascinates me at this particular point is that we seem to know what the problems are. Is a nation, country, society, whatever you want to say, and yet we don't seem to be able to do anything about it other than talk. As you bring up, rightly so.
I think that we live in a culture of celebrities, and people like their presidents now to be sort of a celebrity. It's going to be the better looking, you know, 40-ish, 50-ish year old man that's going to get elected president.
Well, I think that too, but you know, another thing I've speculated on is I think that people don't like to accept responsibility. So we live in a system that makes it easy.
Why are you still talking to this man?
Give
him the empty head at all facts. Give him the empty head at all facts. Hang up and leave him with all facts. Leave him in hell with that empty-headed moron.
You hear, Kat, you know, I don't want you to get in trouble because of me.
What went on before I got here? That's what I want to know. I mean, really, we have a chance here to talk about, you know, interesting things, what I consider interesting, and we're not. I mean, what happened before I got here?
Let's see, about probably a little over an hour in the show. I can go back and look and see if I can pull up the chat, because actually, I let him on, I think, before the Soul Grifter came into chat, and then he went on and on and on for a while, but he did not like the fact that I had Mike Allfax on. He thinks I'm getting my just due. I'm being punished. And he wants to leave me to my...
I love the fact that you have Allfax on. You wrap that empty head around your own and see if you can breathe.
The Soul Grifter, you know, HLB. Let's just think of it this way. Just think of it as an early Hanukkah present from me to you.
Hanukkah.
So you just delight in my torture. Delight in the effectiveness of how you're punishing me. Maybe I'll go to the Catholic Church. I've never gone to confession. Yeah, I was told at one time I was baptized Catholic. I know I was baptized Seventh-day Adventist, so I think that I'm covered with the evangelicals and with the Catholics. But maybe I'll go and I'm sure, even though... they might not be sure I'm a baptized Catholic. I'm sure I can get a priest to listen to my confession, and I will confess in the privacy of the confessional. And then we'll see what he does. We'll see. Since I'm not a Catholic, I don't know if he can give me 10 Hail Marys and 10 Our Fathers. I don't know. But I will confess for torturing you. Dead silence. I love it. Are you online, Kat? I don't know if you can see. I've got the chat. I should pull it up and see where he came in here. But he wants me to see. I don't know. He's just watching to see me be tortured here. I just think that that's incredibly cruel. Incredibly cruel. No compassion for me, the host, that comes here every weekend to provide a forum for y'all to meet and talk back and forth and chat. I'm just here for you. Just for you. One of the kindest, most compassionate talk show hosts you'll ever get. And I am so misunderstood here. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. I'm just going back and chat here. Granny says, call in. That was 322. She didn't. There's something on the clock here. I don't know. I think it's 2 hours ahead. Is that Eastern time? Anyway, there he is. There he is. I can go back and see. I can take you up to the point where he's just upset. He just thinks you shouldn't be talking to me because I had Mike Alfax on. I let Mike speak for quite some time, and it just drives him nuts. And I don't know why, because frequently over and over he's
get it right, Verne.
He doesn't listen. He doesn't.
You
only
wear
really,
him proudly.
Stuff going
you wear Alfax proudly. I give that empty head to you. I hope he calls on your show every moment.
Thank you. He's the yang. You're my yang. You guys are two parts of that difference, sir.
Unmute him and suffer.
There we go. Mr. Alfax, you can respond to the grifter of souls here. So you can make his night so that I can suffer.
Well, I feel so special. But, you know, they say some of us hosts are trying to be stars. I think some callers try to be stars, too. They try to soak up airtime instead of getting their own show and pay their money. They're mooching off of other people's time just to get their celebrity going on, if you know what I mean, Ron. But it's so amazing. See, he's upset that he knows I checkmated him, factually.
That'd be personal.
No, it was already personal when you personally attacked me. You could have just talked about the topic, but you said I was talking to Evelyn. But them trying to find out me personally, it didn't work, because I never try to do that. These are these people's attitude. And the best, Ted and Howard teamed up together and tried to get me, but it didn't work. It backfired, and they know it did.
There you go. There's that idiot. There's the idiot. He cannot.
I love it because I'm on top. Guess what? I can hang up this phone and never call BTR again, but I know for a fact on my deathbed, I checkmated him.
Vernon, that's what you got on your hands. Crazy person. Hello, did Vern?
No, I'm here. My mistake. I've muted my mic so that I would not upset people by chuckling here. I'm sorry to submit you to collateral damage because the soul grifter told me to open the mic so that I could punish myself, and I tried to comply with the request, but when I do that, you have to be subjected to my punishment. That's not nice. What do you think about this study about gay porn in the South? Bible Belt leads the nation in consumption of gay porn.
Who are you asking?
I'm asking you, Kat. Let's see. The soul grifter won't talk to me. I went ahead and muted Mike Alfax so that, you know, so that he wouldn't annoy you. I've got a 111 here that I open up. They must hit the one inadvertently, but they never talk when I open their line. So you're the only one hot. Only one, both
I'm
hot.
Always hot. That's what my husband says.
You are. Anyway, so I did that whole piece on Bible Belt leads the nation in consumption of gay porn. And I thought it was interesting. Like I say, I ran across it. Someone posted it, and the person that posted it originally, there's a lot of people that are just delighted by reading that because they really have a disdain for religious people. I think it's more so because they think that religious people are hypocrites for whatever reason. Maybe it could be because they think that religious people are judgmental about them. But I think it's kind of fascinating. And then the whole thought that crosses my mind there again is, what does it necessarily say or mean?
I don't know what the hell it means. Christian people are horny. That's what it means.
But you know, the interesting part was gay porn. If they just say, you know, the Bible Belt leads nation in consumption of porn, that would be one thing. Consumption of gay porn, that one's kind of another. As it was brought up in the chat room, and someone had mentioned that it. I know, Granny.
Why are you talking to this man? Stop talking to him. Leave him with the empty head. Go mute, say nothing, leave him with that fucking all facts. It's his torture, it's his green mile.
That would be... No. I'm the kind of person who brings wounded animals home, so... I don't know, Vern, if that means anything. Because, okay. There's an Jews own most of the porn industry in the United States. So would you say that Jews target the Christians in the South to convert them or something?
Own most of the porn industry, Kat. Is that true?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think it's funny that Jews own BTR and black people come on here and say the Holocaust didn't happen, and they're making money off of people saying stupid stuff like that. I think it's the biggest irony of ironies. I think they deserve some kind of Nobel Prize for humor in pulling that one off.
I think that's brilliant.
I do too. If I
did
find
not
a way,
know that. I did not know that Jews were the originators of most of the porn. I did not know that at all.
Look, it's no secret that Jews own most of the entertainment industry in the world anyway. Well, in the United States, Chinese and India is way up there now. I'm going to look it up. Jews own porn in U.S. Let's find it.
I'm learning so much. I didn't know that. I just didn't know that. I've been like that mushroom in the dark, you know, being fed bullshit and going through life just happy as a little pig and shit.
Well, it's not being an anti-Semitic thing to say it. I mean, it's just facts are fact. I have nothing against porn, actually.
Yeah, facts are factually true, right?
Yeah.
Who could argue with the factuality of facts? What can I say? Oh, I just am beside myself.
There's
I
just
haven't
a
been
one. Yeah, but, the Odessa Files say Jew admits porn is used as a weapon against WASPs.
Well, it's succeeding. It's absolutely succeeding. That is.
You know, I'm kind of insulted. You never read that article I sent you from the, was it from the Atlantic, about how we view intelligence and why we, you know, develop and think and act the way we do?
No, I have read it, and I've got it marked. It's something I need to do on a Saturday afternoon show, because I don't know that the late night crowd is quite ready for it. It's a pretty in-depth article. It's a long article.
Oh yeah, you could pick it apart and just do a show on a couple paragraphs. It's very.
I could do a couple. Yeah. I could do. Kat, that article's got a lot in it. A couple shows could be done on that.
Oh yeah, it's so much in there. You know it. You know, I really think our justice system, the way that we I think we have a medieval prison system in this country. And I think it needs to be cleaned up, because it seems to perpetuate, it's part of the problem of perpetuating crime. I have all my life believed in the rehabilitation of people. And we have, we don't look at that much. We're more into punishment and blame and shame in this country rather than rehabilitate. I'm not saying that everyone should be rehabilitated. I'm saying that because the justice system is so unfair, and sentences, you don't find rich people on death row. So we all know that there's a lot of money to be made, is being made off the prison system. And for all races, I'm not going to break it down by race. I don't want to get in talking about the drug laws and all like that. I'm just talking about the system overall is very medieval. And I just hope, you know, I've hoped in my lifetime to see something done about it, because I think people are victims of their childhood, and as adults, people who have had these extreme unresolved childhood issues act them out as adults. And I wish that it was more of a prevalent attitude, and I wish that we showed more mercy and compassion to people who commit crimes. I'm not talking about murderers and rapists and people who just take another human life. I think there's a line to be drawn, but I'm talking about people who, especially in the drugs and stealing and, you know, those sorts of nonviolent crimes. And
let me ask you a question about that. Let me ask you a question about that, because it seems to me that one of the problems, I think that it's problematic to simultaneously mix punishment with rehabilitation. I think those are two unique and distinct things. I know a couple people who've spent prison time, and I've had this discussion with them, and it seems to me that there should be an opportunity to earn the right to rehabilitation, and never the twain shall meet. You know, when someone's being punished for a crime, you know, that's a punishment phase. And if someone if people don't want to be rehabilitated, they won't. But I think that you need to separate when people go into rehabilitation stage. You can't have them in a general criminal population run by the rules of the prisons. What do you think?
Well, I think we need to get rid of prisons the way they're operated. I don't think that when people are treated like criminals after they're put in prison, they're going to act like criminals. I think the way we treat criminals has to be changed. I think they need to be put, it should be more into education, it should be opportunity to build their self-esteem. And people say, gosh, you're crazy, Kat, you know. Well, something has to be done. We can't just keep putting, you know, poor people in prison. I mean, at the cost to the state, they keep them in there, and then the people with the violent crimes who are in there much longer. I mean, there has to be a way for them to repay society without there has to be some sort of system where they can work and repay society that way, that the people who are nonviolent and have a chance to be rehabilitated, we need to help them. We need to help. They need intensive therapy. They need to find work in their life.
Do you think there are people behind that are beyond rehabilitation?
Yes, there are people who are beyond rehabilitation because their brains are screwed up.
And what do we do with them? How do we handle them?
I don't have the answer, but I think that the way people are treated in prisons in this country is medieval. I don't think that we can call ourselves a civilized country unless we deal with this prison population and help people, you know, become themselves. I was looking at, and I don't want to get into breaking it down, but I was looking at the abuses of children in this country and the reasons for it and who's doing it. I mean, this is a societal problem. We have children born to all these single parents in every race in this country who are being, and three-fourths of those children live in poverty, and we're going to have this huge prison system where they will be warehoused and other people will be working to support them, and they're going to be continually abused by the state. They're going to be continually told they're worth nothing. These people never had a chance just because of who they were born to. And so,
do you know who E.O. Wilson is?
Who?
E.O. Wilson?
No.
He's a sociobiologist, and he's famous for the following quote. I use it a lot. You know, we have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. Not a good combination.
No, I don't think we're civilized. And, you know, Clinton started the huge building of these private prisons, and there's just, if people can't see the connection between heroin and the prison system and the rap culture that, not all the rap culture, that glamorizes the violence within that, I hate to use the term black community, I would say any music that glamorizes or people think they're getting power through that music, I think it's a really sad situation that children are seeing violence. Like you're talking about this girl's putting lipstick on the mirror, you know, at 12 years old. Well, when we were 12 years old, we wouldn't have thought of doing something like that. I mean, we had a respect for the, you know, our school and took pride in our school.
Well, this is an evolution of a psychology of my, you know, I have rights. And I'm not arguing against rights, and I'm not saying that people don't have rights. I think that the individual does have rights. But I also realize when we live together in a community, in a society, it's like they say, we give up certain rights or we compromise certain, not give up, we compromise with one another to have a functioning society. And when people think that they can just go off on their own 100% and do whatever the hell they damn well please for no reason, we have problems. And I think that, you know, as I've read before, Plato dealt with this in terms of, you know, democracies being attractive, but the freedom is attractive, but it's also disintegrating. There's a growing dislike of any authority, political or moral. Fathers pander to their sons, teachers to their pupils, and the minds of the citizens become so sensitive that the least vestige of restraint is resented as intolerable.
Yeah.
And I think that that's problematic. I remember growing up, and I hate saying those things, hate getting to the age where you say when I was a kid, but I remember being on a construction site and one of our friends stepped on a nail on a board, And I went and got my father, who was at home, and he came up, and we got our asses chewed off out for being on private property. The contractor owned that property, those buildings. We shouldn't have been on there in the first place. Today you have an attitude that kids come on your property or whatever. What's wrong with you? What do you mean I can't skateboard in your driveway or do whatever? You can't tell me what to do, and the parents back them up.
Well, I always tell my children when they got in, I have boys, I didn't have any daughters, but when they got to a certain age, I said, you know, don't ever expect me to sit in front of a teacher or a principal and you know, defend you. And I would never do that. I did that at home, because I always wanted them to know that in life, even if it's unfair, you're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have to deal with being singled out and, you know, accepting unfair punishment. Luckily, they didn't get in too much trouble, you know, just normal stuff like, you know, goofing off in class and things like that. But I think it's real important that children know that, like, that unfairness exists, you know, and what you have to do to protect yourself, you know, how to be socially acceptable, and that every day your behavior and your reputation is ultimately all you have. And without those things, your success and failure rest upon your reputation. And boy, is that true today.
I know we live in a society where youth doesn't believe that they should be accountable for actions. It's, you know, that what I want should be what I get, and you know, that's not society's problem. That's a parental thing, and I think that people get laughed at when they talk about the strong, you know, strong nuclear families. And I'm not saying that you can't have strong valued families, but there's something about having a family structure where the family sits down, where there are rules. If nothing else, within that structure, kids can learn something about the realities of structure and punishment. You know, you do something wrong, you know, you may have to pay for it. And we live in a time where I think that that's missing. Well, I say it's all an adult thing. Actually, the adults are failing the children. And in fact, it goes deeper. I don't know, do you watch much TV? Not that you should.
Like what show? I watch like Modern Family, and I like was that Monday night we watch Almost Human?
Okay. There's a whole slew of commercials that are out these days that I think are atrocious and terrible. And what they are, like there's the one with the father and the son, and it's don't tell mom, don't tell mom, don't tell mom, and the last scene is mom skydiving with the kid, don't tell dad. And I say, what kind of message does that send to children? There's another one, a whole series of them, where adult says, you want to play hide and seek? Oh, yeah, and it's selling, it's telling you how good the chicken wings or whatever the hell it is, the things from McDonald's are. And the kid runs off and hides, and dad tells him that, so he goes and plays hide and seek so dad can steal his food. And the kid, are you coming? Oh, I'm still counting as he deceives the kid to steal his chicken wings because they're so good you can't resist them. And there's a bunch of ads out like that these days that I think that they are funny in one respect, but I think it's a statement of a degrading society.
Well, think about who's making those commercials. There are 30-some-year-old kids who majored in marketing. And they're reflecting their views of the American family.
Yeah, well, that falls into a very strange realm. I'll call it a strange realm. But I've told people, you always hear this whole commentary about the canary in the mine, an indicator. is when things like that become commonplace in society, you've shifted your level of what's acceptable in a very subtle way. Here's Jackie. Jackie, you're on Blog Talk Radio with Vernon and Kat. We only have about 3 to 5 minutes left.
I know, I know. I just wanted to say that your show gets better at the 5 minutes left mark. That's when it got good, at the 5 minute mark. When I started paying attention like 5-10 minutes ago. I just wanted you to say about the commercials. I've brought that point up to you before about with the TV shows. At first, they wouldn't even show people sleeping in the same bed. And now, the TV shows, is the whole 30 minutes is about lying to people who love you, deceiving them. Then it goes off. There's no consequences to pay, really. In the next show or next episode, it has nothing to do with that. They go on to continue to lie and to deceive each other. And you can look at the earlier shows. The lies wasn't that bad in shows like Andy Griffith and, you know, what was this other show? Gosh. It's on the tip of my tongue. Father Knows Best, those type of shows.
Yeah. So. What's interesting about that, too, is and you have brought that up, is actually, you know, I had not thought about it quite in that same thing. You bring that up. You brought that up a lot before. And on the one hand, it's funny that I would accept, you know, and kind of ignore it, not bring it up as much in the dramas, because we kind of cross that point. You know, they start off originally with the separate beds, but when it starts to get it starts to actually get in the advertising too. I mean, to the point of direct deception, like, say, of the kids. And you've probably seen the ads I'm talking about. I think that's a real statement about...
The kids watch the TV, too. So they're taught the art of deception and lying to people that love you all day long. And then they get on the Internet, and they can create personalities that are not them. Look about how long Mike went on about, you don't know me, you don't know me. You know, it's not, nothing today is about being truthful.
So what does that, how does that bode for society, that, where does that say that we're headed? Is it too late to make a difference?
I think we're headed into a society of automation, a society of anonymity. No one knows anything. You can wake up and not even know the person you're sleeping with.
It's interesting because there's a society of anonymity, of everyone wanting, on one hand, but everyone wanting their moment of fame or wanting to be known on another, on the other hand. You know what I mean? The same person that wants to be anonymous in the one respect wants to be known in another respect, in terms of listened to, paid attention to, things like that. In their anonymity, they want their moment of fame. And for everyone listening, I want to thank you for listening tonight. You know, we're going to get cut off here in a minute or so. It's 2:28. But maybe I'll pick this up tomorrow, because I think it's a real it's a real dilemma. And clearly young people, you know, Why would young people listen to someone like me? You're all too young to be listening to me anyway. If I was Socrates, they'd make